Most stories do not start with a journalist. They start with people noticing when a river runs dry, asking why a school is changing, discovering something new next door. Curiosity is human. Your right to keep asking questions is at the heart of NPR's mission, and we are not going anywhere.
Good morning, I'm Andrew Dyer, in for Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Monday, May 11th. Tens of thousands of college students are back online after a cyber attack knocked the platform Canvas offline last week. More on that next. First, the headlines. The Pentagon Friday released a tranche of files on what it calls unidentified aerial phenomenon, commonly called UFOs. On Truth Social, President Donald Trump said people can decide for themselves what's going on and to, quote, have fun. The files date back to the 1950s and 60s. Sighting reports, images, and videos of phenomena are clustered around areas with active military activity, like the Middle East. Skeptics have long said prior military videos of supposed UFOs are explainable illusions. Infrared cameras on moving aircraft, for example, can make simple objects like a party balloon appear to be moving at hundreds of miles per hour. One of those videos was shot off the coast of San Diego in 2004 and has been online for years. Another was recorded off San Diego by a Navy destroyer in 2019. Skeptics contend the first video, called FLIR 1, is an example of blurry infrared footage of another jet's engine exhaust. The second, known as Pyramid, was debunked as the effect of aircraft navigation lights on the triangular aperture of the ship's night vision camera. Reacting to the file's release, former director of the Pentagon Office Investigating UAPs, Sean Kirkpatrick, says there's nothing unexpected and, quote, without any analysis or context, it will only serve to fuel more speculation, conspiracy, and armchair pseudoscience. The files are available at war.gov/UFO. Federal no tax on tips policies don't automatically apply to state income taxes. A bill in the California legislature aims to change that by aligning state tax codes with federal policy. It's by San Bernardino Republican Senator Rosalicia Ochoa Bauk.
Now that the federal government has adopted this policy, we have the opportunity to do the same. Conformity will provide even more relief to the millions of people who support our state's world-class service and hospitality industries.
The bill would allow an itemized deduction up to $25,000 for qualified tips in taxable years 2026 through 2028. The measures passed the Senate Revenue and Taxation Committee. It heads next to appropriations. The city says parking fees reallocated since October have so far led to more than 5,000 road, streetlight, and safety repairs. Until October, parking revenue from districts downtown and in mid-city, Pacific Beach, and uptown were directed to nonprofits in those communities. But the $1.8 million the city reallocated in the effort still fell short of its 2026 sidewalk and streetlight repair goals. According to the proposed 2027 budget, parking revenue accounts for less than half of expected infrastructure repair costs. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
Hola, friends.
In this episode of Port of Entry, we unpack the fear, headlines, and misconceptions that often shape how people in the U.S. see the border.
We sit down with Tijuana native Jorge Meraz, the host of Crossing South, who spent years showing different sides of the region. We share what it's really like to cross between Tijuana and San Diego as part of everyday life.
You don't want to miss this episode. Catch Port of Entry wherever you get your podcasts.
The company that runs the Canvas education platform says it's investigating last week's cyber attack that took the platform down. But students tell reporter Alexander Nguyen that the disruption caused them unnecessary stress during finals season.
Finals season is stressful enough for many students, but what happens when you can't access your notes and lectures to study for those finals? San Diego State senior Selena Gonzalez says she was so stressed during the outage.
Me and a lot of students have dedicated hours throughout our day just for studying, and when Canvas goes down during those hours, it's like We have nothing to do. All our hopes is up.
University of San Diego freshman Jack Kelly says it was difficult not being able to view study materials.
That was not ideal, but, you know, we figure out ways how to get around it, you know, still get my studying in, still get prepared.
In a statement, Canvas says it has shut down the source of the breach and regrets the inconvenience caused by the outage. Alexander Nguyen, KPBS News.
Federal immigration officials last week said the cruise ship workers agents arrested at the Port of San Diego were involved in child sexual exploitation. But reporter Gustavo Solis says they were all deported before federal prosecutors had a chance to file criminal charges.
According to ICE, agents arrested 26 crew members from multiple ships as part of Operation Tidal Wave, which targeted people suspected of having or distributing child pornography. Customs and Border Protection told KPBS that everyone arrested has already been deported, but they would not provide any other information about the criminal investigation. Federal prosecutors in San Diego and LA say that they have no record of criminal charges related to Operation Tidal Wave. Michael Winkelman is a maritime lawyer. He told KPBS news partner ABC 10 News that this is highly unusual.
They could have been charged in U.S. courts and be in federal prison right now, awaiting charges, awaiting trial, etc. But the fact that they were sent home to their home countries, that's actually quite unique.
Another expert told KPBS that deporting people accused of serious crimes before they face consequences denies justice to the victims of those crimes. Gustavo Solis, KPBS News.
The Metropolitan Transit System Board voted to recommend fare increases last month. Public Matters reporter Jay Gatta tells us it might not be a long-term solution.
MTS wants to cover part of its budget deficit with higher fares. The board voted 7-4 in April to recommend the hike, but not everybody is on board with the plan.
I just, again, want to make sure that before we ask riders to pay a cent more, that we've absolutely done everything in our power to bring in revenue other ways.
City Council member Sean Elo Rivera sits on the MTS board. He says the agency should look to improve fare collection first. In 2024, MTS said fare evasion was costing $1 million a month. That year, the agency boosted its security budget by $4.2 million. And last year, they changed a policy to immediately cite non-paying riders. But MTS said as of March this year, more than one-third of riders still weren't paying, which raises a key question. Why don't the trolley platforms have fare gates? The first trolley line was built along freight tracks with limited space for platforms. But with the agency's financial struggles and high evasion rates, Elo Rivera is advocating for gating the system. MTS said it would be challenging and costly to build fare gates. But Elo Rivera said MTS can figure it out, and the added revenue will help pay for it. And he says fare gates could help prevent future price hikes.
All of that comes back to fairness for the working families in San Diego who depend on transit.
Jake Gatta, KPBS News.
Learning how to ride a bike is a milestone for many kids, but the price of a bike, road safety, and parent schedules can all be barriers. Education reporter Katie Anastas takes us to Perry Elementary School, where students are learning how to ride in PE class.
We had some people last week that were going through the stop sign. We need to make sure that we come to a complete stop.
PE teacher Robbie DePero looks out at his class. The transitional kindergarten students each sit next to a white bike.
And I want you guys looking both ways, just like we practiced the first 2 weeks. So you look right, you look
left. He makes sure everyone's helmets fit properly and their seats are at the right height.
Just a little bit lower.
A little bit lower? Okay. Go ahead and get on.
Then everyone walks their bikes out to the blacktop. The students line up for a game of red light, green light.
Green light. Red light. Quickly stop. Good stopping.
This is DePero's fourth year teaching TK, kindergarten, and first grade students how to ride bikes. The curriculum is an 8-week program from the Strider Education Foundation. It's called All Kids Bike.
This week's main objective is to be able to push, glide, stop.
Unlike other kids' bikes, Strider bikes don't have training wheels. DePero says kids learn to balance more quickly.
It's kind of like floaties with swimming. It's almost a false effect of teaching balance and coordination. So what I love about these Strider bikes is it really gets them coordinated and ready, and then we add pedals.
Along with balance, the course teaches students about spatial awareness and controlling your speed.
Good job, Rebecca.
During this lesson, students can try riding over small ramps.
When you see a track, you have to go up and then down, and you have to keep on going to the stop sign.
5-year-old Rebecca Bellett even put her feet up on the footrests. In a week, the footrests will be replaced by pedals.
I like to ride bikes.
In 1972, the Federal Highway Administration reported that nearly half of school-age kids walked or biked to school. In 2017, 10% did. There's another, more recent change DePero has noticed among his students.
One alarming thing is a lot of them are riding e-bikes, which is a new thing the last couple years.
Week one of the curriculum focuses on helmet safety. DePero also reminds students that most e-bikes are meant for kids 12 and up. He sent a letter home to parents about e-bike safety. DePero also asked kids whether they have bikes at home. This year, less than half of them did. Lisa Weyer is the executive director of the Strider Education Foundation. She says bringing bikes to schools makes them accessible to kids whose families might not be able to afford them.
Parents might not have the resources to either one teach their kids how to ride a bike at home because they're working two jobs or more. There might not be the infrastructure. There might not be a bike path or a safe park where they can teach their kids how to ride.
The All Kids Bike Program comes with 24 Strider bikes, 24 helmets, a teacher bike, and a rolling storage rack. The program costs $9,000 per school and is meant to last up to 10 years. DePero applied for a grant to pay for the program at his school. He says after COVID, he wanted to find a way to teach his students a childhood rite of passage.
I just loved riding bikes when I was a kid. Our older classes here have the opportunity to learn how to swim. I'm a big proponent for learning how to swim and learning how to ride a bike as a kid. It's kind of one of those staple things.
He says learning how to ride a bike means learning resilience.
I try to teach them that it's messy and learning is all part of it, and you get better. You just stick with it. There is tears at times and Band-Aids, but eventually they get it. And I really do try to create an environment where the kids feel safe and they can take risks.
He says he's proud of his students for rolling with the challenges. Katie Anastas, KPBS News.
A parent webinar about e-bikes is happening tomorrow evening. It's hosted by San Diego County Supervisor Tara Lawson-Reamer and Scripps Health. You can find more information on our website, kpbs.org. Last week, La Mesa's police department held a ceremony for Officer Lauren Craven, who died last October in the line of duty. Reporter Elaine Alfaro says Craven's the first to be honored on the city's Peace Officer Memorial.
The Blackstone Memorial stands in front of the police department and reads, "In valor there is hope. We will never forget."
Her impact was amazing in the sense that she was just a wonderful human being first. And she just had so much care and compassion for others and the community.
That's La Mesa Police Lieutenant Travis Higgins.
She really felt like this was a true calling for her, and it was obvious in the way she went about her daily life.
Craven was hit and killed by a car while assisting a motorist who was in a 5-vehicle crash on the eastbound side of Interstate 8. She was the first officer in the history of the La Mesa Police Department to be killed in the line of duty. Elaine Alfaro, KPBS News.
That's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. I'm Andrew Dyer. Lawrence K. Jackson will be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening and subscribing. By doing so, you're supporting public media. Have a great Monday.
Before a producer hits record or before a journalist picks up a pen, someone like you notices something and wants to understand it. Every day, we invite you to keep asking questions like why and who and how. Because NPR begins with questions, not conclusions. And your right to curiosity is a right worth protecting.